Our interview today is with Mr. Richard Leitner, journalist with the Brabant Chain in Hamilton, Ontario. He's also a Michener Award winner for his coverage on the Tarot Dump story.
So what first attracted you to spending all your time looking at the Tarot Dump story?
I had been working in Dundas prior to coming to the Stoney Creek News. I was the editor of the Dundas Star for 3 years. And as part of that, I had covered a very similar proposal in Greensville, which is on the hill above Dundas. And the proposal there was to create this massive dump that in a fractured limestone quarry, proposing to use unproven technology to contain the contaminants. So when I arrived in Stony Creek, I saw that initially I didn't think the proposals were that similar, but the closer I looked, the more I realized that they were virtually identical. And in fact, the proposal in Greensville had been turned down by the Environmental Assessment Board after 120 days of public hearings. One of the reasons that that proposal was turned down in Dundas was certainly because of the intervention of politicians. You couldn't get elected in Dundas if you supported the Steatley dump. And certainly one of the reasons the Harris government confirmed the Environmental Assessment Board decision to turn down that proposal is because of the hard work of Tony Skrika, who was then the Tory MPP for that area.
And yet, the Stony Creek, there was no public hearing.
No. In fact, the whole process was designed by the company to avoid public hearings, and they successfully did so. The closer I looked, I saw that they were virtually identical. Fractured limestone quarry, proposing to use unproven technology to try and contain the contaminants. In Stony Creek's case, actually, far more people living in the area. Back in the early 90s, probably about 14,000 people living in the vicinity of the dump, as opposed to the Steatley dump. There is Greensville, but not nearly that size. You know, probably we're talking perhaps 800 to 1,000 people.
Okay, and there is the politics. Trying to show how the corporate and how the political situation affects what gets reported in the news. Now, you've just cited the opposite side of that, of how the community has a point to make and concerns to be heard, and the press picks up on that and follows through with the story. And that's how one would want it to be.
Yes, although I would point out that there wasn't a lot of media coverage outside of the Dundas paper on that issue. The Spectator did cover it from time to time, but certainly not in any intensive way. One of the things the company initially said was that nobody knew about this proposal, and you know, they ironically initially welcomed the coverage. But the more I covered it, the more concerned certainly I became about the proposal, but also residents did. So it did eventually spawn the Stony Creek Residents Against Pollution, SCRAP, which was headed by Brad Clark. That certainly changed the entire tenor of the debate locally. The politicians at that point had not expressed any concerns about the proposal. Even the ward councillor for the area was not concerned about a proposal to put a massive industrial dump in the heart of his community.
Was it that they just didn't know what the heck was going on? Or did they know and trying to hide it?
They knew it was going on. I think Philip Services Corp, which was the owner, back then would have been actually Philip Environmental, was very good in its PR. You know, they downplayed any potential concerns, and they certainly threw out a carrot to the council saying, we'll give you royalties on this.
Isn't that bribery?
Certainly, Ian Thomas, the songwriter who lives in Winona and became involved in this debate, called it graft on the front line. Because they offered, essentially it was $10 million in royalties over 20 years, which I don't think is a lot of money, personally, when you're considering that the dump at, if you would get $35 a ton, you're looking at least $350 million in revenue, probably higher, given the sorts of wastes that they've taken. The site itself, it's classified as non-hazardous industrial, commercial, and institutional waste. One of the reasons, you know, people weren't perhaps as concerned in the early going was if somebody says, we're going to put non-hazardous waste in this hole, people think, well, it's non-hazardous. However, if you actually look at what's going in there, is very noxious materials, stuff that has a whole variety of heavy metals and other constituents that are hazardous. Just in Ontario, we have a level at which something's considered hazardous, and you can put some very nasty stuff into a landfill and have it considered non-hazardous. And I think that was part of public misconception about the proposal. And I think as people became aware of the type of wastes that could go in the dump, they became more concerned.
Was there any complaints from anybody before it got to that level where they were reading about it in the paper? Did some local neighbor complain about smell or maybe well water problems or a farmer having livestock problems? Any complaints before the paper started writing up what was going on?
Anne Varangu, a resident out in Vinemount, was sort of the first resident to really follow this issue. I mean, she was sort of an army of one to brought concerns to the public. But I'd say, in general, people weren't initially concerned, in part because they didn't know about it, because the city of Stony Creek didn't even identify. And the city of Stony Creek, if you went down to City Hall and you looked and said, what is that at that property? It would say it was a park. Well, it was a dump. They planned to turn it into a park. So a lot of people bought homes in that area thinking that that was a park. And because there were trees lined all around the perimeter.
Or just an empty quarry not being used anymore. Those that lived there long enough knew about the quarry. They just didn't realize what it became of the quarry.
That's right. And the, you know, that's the other sort of the change of ownership. Philip bought it in the late 80s, and that changed the waste streams of the dump. Before, it was owned by Cope & Sons, but it's possible that they put stuff in there that shouldn't have been in there.
Already, it's very political. It's already being controlled as far as what media knows, what the people know. You're talking about some very serious information that the public should be made aware of, and yet there's deals being made here by Philip Environmental and the then city or town of Stony Creek, or the region of Wentworth, Hamilton-Wentworth, whatever governments they were dealing with. So obviously there was political deals already going down to have this thing not be looked at.
There was a complicating factor here is, at that point, Philip had just been awarded the contract to run the region's sewage treatment and water treatment. And that deal, if you look at the deal, was a 10-year untendered contract, $187 million. That deal very much tied Hamilton's future to Philip's future, because there were incentives in there. There was sort of an agreement that there would be cross-promotion and that parties wouldn't criticize each other.
Parties wouldn't criticize each other. What does that mean?
There's actually a clause in the there was a clause in the contract that said that they wouldn't publicly criticize each other. So that certainly made it, as far as the region's approach to the Tarot dump, Phillips' view was, we need this dump to be a successful company. So the region had somewhat of a conflict of interest there, because it had tied its fortunes, in my view, to Phillips' fortunes. And rather than looking out, for the public interest, it at times considered Phillips' interests.
Let's bring the press aspect into this. And this is where the press is not allowed to do their job. Some were buried in there, because you're saying that there was some sort of a deal or agreement made. It's a little unethical. There was no tender. There's supposed to be a public process. People are supposed to know about these things. And the press is supposed to be made aware so they can make the people aware. But something started to not happen at that period.
Well, I would say, it's not that the press wasn't aware. But if you look at the coverage and editorials in The Spectator, for instance, at the time, they were basically cheerleading for this untendered contract. You did have some citizens raise concern about an untendered contract, because the process here for the sewage treatment plant deal was essentially this. There had been some controversy about the operation of that plant for years, including they had bought some sludge dryers that never worked, that were cost millions of dollars, and they had some other periodic sort of incidents that weren't viewed favorably public. Certainly a plant that created controversy from time to time. But Philip one day shows up at City Hall with the hired Dr. Stuart Smith, who is a former MPP and former leader of the Ontario Liberal Party. as sort of their front man to come in. He had been involved in what he called private-public partnerships, which is privatization in any other term. So he was their front man, came in and said, look, we'd like to operate your sewage treatment plant. And that's how the process started. So then they went into negotiations about that. And at the time, you know, the Spectator wrote cheerleading editorials about that, about how this was going to be a great deal and how respected Dr. Smith was. And I think that partly lowered the media's guard, or certainly the Spectator's guard. I think if you take positions like that publicly and they're not borne out in the future, it's a bit difficult to climb down off that horse and kind of admit, ooh, you know, we told the community this was going to be a great thing.
There's no competition in this area for the Spectator except for the Brabant chain to speak of. So they can pretty much make up their own rules as far as what the citizens of Hamilton are going to know about and hear about. And it sounds to me like they were either tremendously naive, misinformed by promotion to do with the Phillips end of things, didn't do enough research, or were politically told this is the position you're going to take. Something's wrong there, because both sides weren't told. There is so much that finally came out that you've got to think ahead and say something's wrong.
To put this in context, at the time of the signing of that deal, Hamilton had gone through a tremendously damaging recession. We all can see the numbers in the steel industry have declined. So you have people looking for something that is going to help Hamilton rebound. And at that time, we had just gone through the Vision 2020 process, and there was this focus on creating green industry. And that's how Phillips sort of sold itself, is look, we are going to be Hamilton's major green industrial player, and we're going to bring thousands of jobs to Hamilton. So on one level, I think politicians and people, the decision makers in, let's say at the Spectator, bought into that dream. I'd say it was a pipe dream. However, it's not completely, I don't think people had necessarily ulterior motives there. I think, you know, some people genuinely thought that, look, this company is going to be good for Hamilton. There'll be a lot of jobs. And as part of that, the trade-off, I guess, for some of them was that, yeah, maybe they'd have to allow them to put this dump in the middle of Stony Creek's fastest growing community.
But isn't that improper journalistic integrity? It just screams out at me, we're only looking at one side. Now, maybe we need a small refresher course, Richard. Maybe you can just give us a brief reminder of what it means to be a journalist and the rules and the laws that are expected.
Well, journalists should approach any issue and try and get at the truth. I'm talking about sort of the decision makers at the Spectator. You know, the reporters at the Spectator take direction from their bosses. I mean, the Spectator has long been known as sort of an editor's paper. So the idea that, you know, reporters kind of go out and cover whatever they want is not the case. There is some freedom, but certainly you take direction, is my understanding. And I know a lot of reporters at the Spectator, you know, they would tell me, we don't know why we're not covering this issue. It's not because there isn't concern.
So we have good journalists in this city, and I do agree with you, because I've bumped up shoulders with a few of them that saw the story, were trying to write some maybe alternative viewpoint than they were used to seeing in the paper, and being told no, or pulled right off. In fact, the most alarming thing I've ever heard is last year when the Spectator decided Hamilton, a heavy industrial city with all these toxic waste problems, doesn't need an environmental reporter anymore. That, to me, screams corporation control.
Yeah, but it certainly does indicate that there is a mindset there that doesn't encourage environmental reporting. Eric McGinnis had done their environmental reporting. Tremendous reporter. It's shameful that they don't have an environmental reporter. But, you know, that's been the trend within the media, is to reduce several beats. We don't have a labor reporter in this city, Hamilton used to be known as a labor town. Have to be honest, I'm sometimes skeptical whether it is indeed anymore, but part of the problem is there isn't a labor reporter at the Spectator.
So that's because, and I'm going to state this again, corporate takeover, corporate control of the media, you end up with social situations like this, with a city like the size of Hamilton not getting full coverage, not knowing what's really going on out there, because we don't have a reporter that's writing it. Or if we do have a reporter that's writing it, they're not getting their story in the paper. It's getting edited or thrown out. You obviously had some freedom here. Freedom that you would not have had if you worked for the Spectator.
Absolutely. The company, certainly under Southam, would have been under Southam's ownership back then, gave me a great deal of latitude to do what I wanted to on that issue and supported me. You know, when Philip came in, a couple delegations come in and visit our offices to complain about the coverage, and they didn't like the editorials that we were writing because they were critical of the proposal and of particularly of how City Council, the Stony Creek City Council, was handling the proposal. When they came in and raised concerns, the publisher did buy our coverage. That was a tremendous boost of confidence and expression of support.
That surprised me, because some of the other stories I've heard about Southam is a, you know, typical corporate controlled paper. Maybe it was because you were a weekly that they didn't think it was anything to really worry about.
That would have been part of it. And I just want to sort of, if you look at the Brabant Chain's corporate ownership, it was independent until 1987, which coincidentally, it was the year that I started. I think 2 months after I started, Southam bought the Brabant chain, and there was actually a bidding war for the chain, and my understanding is that Torstar, which is our current owner, had put in an offer and actually had put in a non-refundable $400,000 deposit on its offer. So, you know, we were a hot commodity back then, because you had the Spectator, which is the, you know, the only daily in town, and we were, you know, the paper sort of surrounding.
The only alternative viewpoint.
Yes, and the Spectator was owned by Southam. So Southam wanted the Brabant chain, as they wanted in Vancouver, where they owned both the Province and Sun, the Vancouver Province and Sun. They also bought the weeklies that surrounded those papers, and there was actually a competition tribunal hearing into that, in which a Southam executive characterized the purchase that they wanted to bomb-proof their two papers there. And I think, you know, that was sort of the thinking that went...
Controlling the news, making the news what they wanted.
You know, I think at some level they're not concerned about the news. They're concerned about the ad revenue. So, you know, the idea there was, and I think similarly in this market, was we don't want to give advertisers, or we want to protect our advertising base at the Spectator, and one way to do that is to own the Brabant chain, so that, you know, if you do advertise, if you're not advertising at the Spectator, you're advertising at Brabant, which we also own. I think that's, you know, that it's about money. It's not about the news.
So that's what it all boils down to. The art of journalism is a side issue, or maybe third back issue for these media outlets. Really.
It's all about the money.
It's all about advertising and money. So that's what corporate media is all about. It's about how much money can we make selling ads. Not let's have a good paper, journalism with integrity. Let's really, you know, they're not about any of that stuff. You get guys like you. If you were on the Spectator, you would probably have been fired. But you were still given a hard time at Brabant for doing your job.
As, you know, the issue developed, they got the dump approval. And we had successive management changes in the late 90s after I had covered several problems with the dump, including that it had been accepting hazardous cyanide sludge from Michigan.
And that's also from another company that Philip owned, by the way.
Yes, yeah. from a Detroit plant.
Yeah.
Well, actually, there was an investigation into that, and, you know, in the companies, and, you know, I'm not defending what the company did, because I think it was morally unacceptable, but actually they were not outside of the law, because there was basically a loophole in the law that allowed them to do this. The loophole is being closed, and one of the reasons I would submit that Philip was able to do this is because it had several former Ministry of the Environment employees on its staff. I mean, they were well known for doing that, for paying people double what they would have earned in government to go over to Philip, and they helped them sort of work through the rules. You know,
yeah,
you know,
bend the rules a bit.
Well, you know, and at some point, one of the Philip bosses, I had written a column after the dump was approved. I didn't usually write columns on that issue, but I had called it the approval despicable, and he called me up and he said, "Richard, despicable?" And I said, "Yes, in my view, it is despicable." And I said, "Look, you know, you are in the business of making money. I understand that. Everybody understands that. That's what a corporation is about. It is up to the politicians and the media to hold corporations accountable. But I thought that, you know, the whole process was despicable, because the money, the payoffs, you know, and Philip was up front about this, we'll give you royalties if you accept this deal, and the city council consistently supported, the Stony Creek Council consistently supported this proposal by a 5-4 vote. And they did so because, I would say, because a number of them lived in other wards. So they didn't, you
know, affect their lives. But, I mean, how could they ignore the reality of what was about to happen? How could they ignore the environmental laws? Why do we have Department of Environment if people can come in and corporations can bring people in with enough money and say, look the other way on this rule?
Again, it's the politicians, though. You know, the Ministry of Environment can be as stringent or as lenient as we want it to be. You know, I deal with ministry people. They're decent, honest people. The government sets the tone of how the ministry operates. So, for instance, the Harris government had slashed their budget by 40%. So all of a sudden, you don't have the frontline workers to do their job. As well, you know, the government sets the tone. The Harris government was, you know, business first. And it's not as if the ministry didn't point out, or the government agencies didn't point out, the failings of this proposal. The Niagara Escarpment Commission, for instance, told the government that this proposal was virtually identical to the Redland Steatley proposal that had been turned down after 120 days of hearing before the Environmental Assessment Board. However, the Niagara Escarpment Commission didn't ask for a hearing because its budget had been cut so much it couldn't afford to participate. Now, I think they still should have asked for hearings, but again, politics did play a part there because you have councillors on the Escarpment Board. You know, some of those people are appointed by the province.
But a lot of this will be followed back if you look at it closely. I mean, the politics are dictated by whoever's got the most money, whatever corporate lobbyists can get through, who gets the position, who wins the seat, how much money's backing them up. So you can trace all of that control that's supposed to be for the public. If you want to follow all those loose threads, they're all going to go back to a corporation making money. And it's not supposed to be that way. I mean, in a democracy, the government is supposed to be following the wishes of the majority, the people. But if they do it in a situation where the people don't know what the heck is going on, they can get away with tons of stuff. And Hamilton is a prime example of some of the atrocities to what's going to be happening to people's health later on. In this example with the Taro dump, by controlling the media. And when you were starting to get into the story and write it more, things happened to you. You were threatened.
Well, I certainly did receive a call after the Fifth Estate had come down to do a story on the dispute, and I did get a call after that